Welcome to Love, Sweat, and Tears. Today, we are sitting right here with the Dr. Bruce Gehring, superintendent of Leander ISD. And Leander ISD is one of the fastest growing districts in our state and in our nation. And I know there may be some little things that have changed with that, Dr. Gehring, but we're going to talk about the future of education. And Bruce, I know that we've known each other for, gosh, I was trying to think about it before we got on together. And God, I think I go way back to, I'm thinking Mount Pleasant ISD. And you were the assistant.
I think so. Yes.
Was that like 2005, maybe? I don't remember.
Yep. It's 20 years ago right now.
Isn't that crazy to think that 20 years ago? So you, I've known you for a very long time and seen you just really blossom in your career as a leader across the state. And so I want our listeners to be able to hear about and understand the heart behind your leadership, because there's a lot that goes on with the Dr. Bruce Gehring. And so in the first part of our conversation, listeners, we're going to be digging into the personal journey of Dr. Gehring, the tough lessons that he's potentially learned. I'm sure there haven't been many as I'm giggling, and what it takes really to build a culture of trust, because trust is a huge thing when you're leading, I'm going to say, human beings, right? So let's just start at the beginning. So Bruce, you've seen education from the classroom to the district office. And I mean, that's been quite a journey for years for you. So what's one belief that you've just held tightly with as back when you were either a principal, a young leader, that you've just really had to let go over the years?
Oh, that I've had to let go
over the years. Think of like that first journey as a principal or in a leadership position all the way up until now, you know.
Yeah, I will tell you the thing that I used to believe was that you could change a system in a relatively short amount of time. And when I say a relatively short amount of time, I mean like 3 years. Mm-hmm. I used to think you could come in somewhere and if you did all the right things and built all the right relationships and really executed well, that in 3 years you could completely transform a system. And I was completely wrong about that. That is just blatantly not true. It takes much, much longer than that to really develop sustained transformation in especially a large system. Mm-hmm. And so I had the opportunity in Dripping Springs to be there for 7.5 years as the superintendent. And now I've been in Leander ISD for mm-hmm. 6 years. And we're just starting to really see the grassroots change of the transformations that we've been working on for that entire time. And so in Dripping Springs, we were fortunate to have somebody come behind me who continued to push that same change and that same transformation. And so they are seeing success in that mm-hmm. model. But it does take an inordinately long time. And also you have to maintain the pressure on that change consistently throughout that entire time.
Oh, that's interesting. Maintain that pressure. What does that sound like or look like when you talk about maintaining that pressure?
Yeah, so when you're trying to really transform a system like a public school system or even a school at the individual level, you have to put a lot of pressure on making the changes that are necessary, because we're naturally, as human beings, we get to know one way of doing things and then we hold on to it with everything that we're worth, right? And in public education specifically, we've really trained ourselves. I say we've almost brainwashed ourselves into how we do business mm-hmm. over time. And so if you're trying to change that, it takes a lot of pressure to keep the change in place for long enough so that it really sticks. Because otherwise, what happens is you take the pressure off and it bounces back to exactly what it was before, because that's what we know and like to do.
Wow, that is really interesting. So our podcast is called Love, Sweat, and Tears because leadership is truly full of all three. So as you're talking about that, can you tell us a story about a moment of sweat and tears? Maybe a significant challenge, just what you feel like would be helpful for other leaders listening that it may have been a failure. Or a crucial moment, and what it taught you about what does it mean to lead?
Yeah, I mean, there's been lots of those moments in my experience. I think one that comes to mind is actually from quite a long time ago, in Mount Pleasant, where I started my leadership journey. I was a principal at a K-2 elementary school named Annie Sims Elementary School, and one of the real challenges that we had was this transition of kids from a K-2 setting then into the 3-4 setting, where all of the testing started and all of those accountability measures were for the campus and the adults in the system. And as we examined that, we really felt like that was a poor way to structure the system as a whole. And so we were invited into this conversation about how do we shift that into a K-4 model across the district. And I think you and Megan were potentially part of some of those conversations of making that transition. But that's a really difficult thing to do when that's what you've always done in a community, right? And one of the things that helped really fuel that transformation was not only a transition of grade level concept and how we put that together, but also a transition then from really old, rundown, unsafe environments into new, safe, innovative learning environments for the kids, built around this input from the community and what do you really want? What are your hopes and dreams for your children and how do we meet those hopes and dreams over time? And then we were able to really make that successful transformation over time.
So you're making me think about culture when you talk about that, because culture, it's not like a poster on the wall, right? I mean, it's something that is felt in the hallways or in the buildings, each day that you walk into it. So when you talked about moving that campus, into transitioning into building that culture of trust, how do you move beyond the statements of building a trust of a culture of trust and innovation from the ground up? Because when you think about what you did in Mount Pleasant, that was moving the needle. It was moving it into something that they had never done before. And so how were you able to move that?
I've always found that you can talk about a culture and a culture of trust, but what people really care about is how does this affect me and how does it affect my child? And so if you can really get down to that individual conversation and start having that conversation about each and every child and individual in the system, and then you can really start to uncover the uniqueness of each individual, and not each individual, but each individual human being, because there's something different when you start thinking about like these are not widgets in a system. These are not pieces of a puzzle. These are unique human beings who are full of talent and potential and feelings and strengths and weaknesses and all the things. But the response of that individual to the system is unique. And so how do I make sure that I'm really adjusting to the individual and not trying to push individuals into a system I've created? So I've always thought about culture as I'm not going to create a system and then force you to comply inside my system. Rather, I'm going to look at your situation and say, how do I modify and adjust to meet your needs?
Right.
And then if I do that every time and I do it enough times, eventually over time I get this critical mass that then helps to forge and change and transform the system as a whole. And that's what for me is culture.
So you're making me think about, I mean, as we move into thinking about innovation, innovation requires risk, right? And it requires that sometimes we're going to fail. I mean, that risk automatically comes with some sort of failure. How do you create an environment where a teacher, a principal in your organization feels psychologically safe enough to try something new, knowing there's potential for failure, you know, in a system that we're set up with where you're in a fishbowl and everyone's watching, right? So how do you do that, Bruce?
For me, it's all about ownership. And so it's about ownership of learning, but it's also about ownership of responsibility. And when you empower people to be the professionals that they are, and you trust them to make decisions because you know you hired them for the heart mm-hmm. they have, and the fact that they want to do the right thing and want to improve the system, then people will start to believe that they can. And once they believe that they can, they will be willing to take the risk that is necessary to take that first step. And that's the hardest part, right?
Yeah.
It's just taking that first step towards whatever it is. So I don't expect you to be successful right mm-hmm. out the gate, but I do expect that you'll take that first step, that you'll take the risk to start something, and then that you'll continually improve on whatever it is you started over time. And that means you have to ask for help. Mm-hmm. That means you have to collaborate with others. That means you have to really be attuned to the changes and the forces that are influencing and happening around you in order to really be able to grow that over time. And again, we come back to that issue of you don't make this change today. You start
right.
the change today, but you don't finish the change today. The change may only finish in 7 to 8 years' time. You know?
Exactly. So that leads me to thinking through, as you talked about starting that change, then how do you celebrate that learning? How do you celebrate that learning that comes from those attempts? And sometimes when they don't go exactly as planned, I mean, in your organization, what does that look like? How do you celebrate that?
We talk about it in two ways. So we always talk about what are the leading measures and then what are the lag mm-hmm. measures. So the lag measures are the big things that we're going to measure near the end. And so, yes, some of that is standardized test scores. Some of that is, AP scores or ACT scores, or some of that is graduation rate, or did our kids meet the graduate profile mm-hmm. as they were graduating from our system? But along the way, we have to be looking at what are the lead measures. So what are the things that tell me that I'm on the right track, that I'm making a progress, that I've taken the first right step, and that I'm continually improving and growing and getting better as I go forward. And those are the things that we're celebrating. So we worry a lot less about the lag measures because we know if we take care of the leading measures and celebrate the progress that we're making at every level of the organization. And when I say that, so we're pushing ownership of learning at every level, but that means adults have to be owning their learning. They have to be in charge of their professional learning. They have to be the ones who want to do these things differently. They have to be working well in their collaborative mm-hmm. teams as part of the professional learning community. But it's for kids too. And that's difficult to do because the adults are not used to it, but the kids are definitely not used to it. They want to be told, what do I do next? And did I get the right answer? And instead, we want them to struggle with difficult concepts. We want them to really dig in and we want them to apply them in new situations and do those things. And so that all takes ownership. It all comes back to if I own my learning, if I know I'm responsible for finding what lights me up, what ignites my passion,
right.
then when I succeed, I know it and I can celebrate it.
Wow. So Dr. Gehring, Bruce, I want to call you Bruce for everyone listening, Dr. Gehring,
please.
You have laid out a powerful vision for leadership leadership that is really centered around trust and just the human component of it. You are the essence of real change in your leadership. But what happens when you build on that foundation? And so that's going to be our cliffhanger, guys, because we are going to shift to shifting gears to look in the future for part two. So we'll dive deep into the next episode into AI in the classroom, in the school, and preparing Generation Alpha for that. So for the world that our students have yet to imagine, and we're way further than we ever thought we would at this point. So stay tuned for the practical steps that we're going to talk about in the next episode. You're not going to want to miss it. Join us in the next episode in the conclusion of our conversation here with Dr. Bruce Gehring.